Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
Good afternoon. We want to welcome you to today's show of the American College Experience. My name is Jason Haynes. I am the host of the show and also the Chief Executive Officer of the UR Tennis Network. Very proud to let you know that we have other shows on the air that come about each week. And we try to cover tennis, just like we say, with as many angles as we can. Monday is Parenting Aces with Elisa Stone. Wednesday, before I go on air, is American Tennis with Chuck Creasy. I also have my show, The American College Experience, which explores college tennis in the United States. Saturdays, we have Infinite Tennis with Bill Patton. We also have Minorities in Tennis with Alex Chan. We are looking for other shows to put on the air, and we are always open here to see if there are people that want to come on and display their passion for tennis in a unique way. On today's show, we have Coach Steve Beatoff. Steve is the head women's coach at Kansas State University in the Big 12. We look forward to visiting with him shortly. I hope that you've been watching the U.S. Open. It's been very exciting, both on the men's and the women's side. The women's side, we've had a great young group of American tennis players slowly but surely making their way into the mainstream tennis world. On the men's side, not so fortunate. Still in a little bit of a drought. Waiting for those kids to show their stuff. And we've been fortunate to see the Big Four on the men's side for at least a little while. Roger Federer went out in straight sets the other night to Tommy Robredo. That was hard to watch. As long as he has been good, it starts to feel like things are kind of unraveling just a little bit. Hopefully he'll get back on track and make himself a true competitor in this and not die a death 1,000 times. There is some exciting things that are going on in the college tennis world, some exciting things related to the U.S. Open. The biggest one is the Bryan brothers, who, remember, played at Stanford University. They are on a major task here. They have a chance to win the Grand Slam. That's the calendar Grand Slam in doubles. And that hasn't been done in 45 years. Think about 1951. No, that would have been 1968. Now, the Bryan brothers are 35 years old, so it's been quite a long time since they played at Stanford University, but they've carried the U.S. banner and the college banner very well. They have the Australian Open, the French Open, Wimbledon. Last year they won the U.S. Open. They're just trying to make sure that they get the Grand Slam. And don't forget that they won the Olympic title as well. These guys are on fire. I remember watching an interview after Wimbledon that said they were just still having fun, and that was what was most important. And they haven't just been, winning these Grand Slam titles. They have won 10 titles this year, collected 92 career titles, 15 Grand Slam titles, 4 U.S. Opens. They've already clinched the year-end number one ranking for a record 9th time and the 5th consecutive season. I think Coach Gould out at Stanford made a good choice in bringing those guys in for a couple of years, teaching them what team tennis was about. It really helped them realize that together they can do a lot and have been showing that. So, and, you know, if you've been watching, they've been showing some of these matches on TV, and I'm so pleased with that, and it's been fun to watch. There haven't been many people in the stands, and I start to understand why CBS and the rest of the networks don't want to show doubles, because not many people watch doubles live, but apparently lots of people in the tennis TV world want to see doubles on TV, so it's good that we're kind of meeting here in the middle. I hope they continue to show those doubles matches as much as they can, because this is historic. Historic for college tennis, historic for U.S. tennis, and historic for Bryan Brother tennis. Another interesting article that came out, John Isner, who is a product of the American collegiate system, attended the University of Georgia. He is ranked number 14 in the world and is the highest American player. He had a great summer, winning a couple of titles, putting himself in position to get that U.S. Open series money until Rafael Nadal came along. I think it's at about $3.6 million that Nadal has a chance to add to his winnings if he does happen to win the U.S. Open. And I think Serena has a chance there as well. I read just recently that Nadal sits at about $6.4 million prize money on the year. Remember, he started with all those clay court titles, didn't do real well at Wimbledon, won the French, has had a great hard court season. After his first round win, and he got into the press room, one of the questions centered around college tennis. And he mentioned that it's a very good option for young players, especially on the men's side, to consider college tennis first. Maybe not so much on the women's side, and that is because the women mature a little bit faster than men. On the guys, he said, there aren't many 19, 20-year-olds on the tour right now, at least in the top 100 at all. He says there's no better way to become a better player and really just a better person in general than to go to college during those years. Go to college, win a lot of matches, which is what I did. When you leave college, you come off feeling pretty good about yourself and about your game. I'd agree with that. I was researching today, and we had Michael Russell, who also played at the University of Miami for a couple of years, and he has a losing record this year. He's a top 100 player and made the comment that if you're in the top 35 on the men's tour, that you probably have a losing record. And pro tennis prepares you and teaches you how to lose. College tennis gives you a chance to win and do some great things there. One last little bit that I want to talk about here, and this is the last bit I've got on college tennis, is James Blake. James played at Harvard University, actually won the ITA indoor tournament, and he retired at the U.S. Open this year. That was hard to see as a fan of American tennis, as a fan of college tennis, and a James Blake fan. It was hard to realize that he would no longer be on the tour. And he was a very popular guy, and lots of people were upset, and I don't mean literally, but upset to see him leave the Pro Tour. And as I realized, as he left the Pro Tour, he was off court, I think, maybe a day, and then they brought him into the broadcast booth there at the U.S. Open. So I think we may be hearing a little bit more from James in the future, but glad that the college tennis has had so many success stories, particularly on the men's side, that have come out this summer, and we sure wish those Bryans good luck as they chase that slam. Got Coach Steve Beatall here on the line. Before I bring him in, just a quick reminder, if you want to call in today, the number is 714-583-6853, 714-583-6853. Let's see if we can bring him in. Hello, Coach Beatall, are you there?
I'm here, Jason. How are you?
I'm pretty good. I'm having a great day. The temperature is dying down here in Houston. We've gone from 99 to 95.
Well, we're not far behind here in Manhattan, Kansas, but it's a beautiful day.
Yeah, which if you've been out on the court when it's 99, you can definitely tell a difference when it's 95.
That's right.
how long have you been in school, Coach?
Oh, let's see. We're in the middle of our second week. We started a week ago Monday.
Okay. Now, before we get too far into this, there are going to be some people that listen to this show that have no idea who Steve Beatall is. So if you could just tell us a little bit about your story.
Okay. You want me to do that now?
Yeah, go ahead, Coach. Uh-oh. Coach, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, go ahead. You bet. Tell your story about your, how you got into coaching and how you ended up there at Kansas State.
Sure. Well, Jason, I had a very non-traditional tennis career as a youngster. No one in my family played tennis, and I didn't start playing tennis until I was 14 or 15. I grew up in Rockford, Illinois, about an hour west of Chicago, good sized city, the second largest city in Illinois behind Chicago, real active high school sports, and I was a good sized guy, and so I gravitated towards football, and as a freshman in high school, the football coaches said you will go out for track, and so that was sort of the accepted path, and I did, and decided that I didn't like it, and for various reasons, so the next summer, I had a few buddies who played tennis, and that's where I got my start, We rode our bikes to the court every day and played singles all morning and went to the A&W drive-in and had root beer and a hot dog for lunch and then rode back to the park and played doubles all afternoon and did that pretty much every day for a summer and all of a sudden I thought I was a tennis player. So we had great high school tennis there. There were some outstanding players on my team, so it was really a challenging thing. I don't think I ever played above four or five on my high school team, and great coaching and just lots of good competition, and so proceeded from there to attend a junior college at home and didn't even play as a freshman in junior college. And my second year, I had some guys competed against in high school that were at the same local junior college and they convinced me to give it a try. So I played that year and was sort of finding my path and in life. I thought I was going to be an electrical engineer for some reason, and not that there's anything wrong with that path. It can be a great one, but it wasn't the one for me, and I figured that out during that time, and that's where my passion for tennis really sort of took off. The dilemma that I had was that I wasn't a very accomplished player, and here I am after 2 years of junior college and one season of college tennis and looking for a place to go. So I ended up at a little NAIA school in Nebraska called Doane College, and turned out to be the greatest move I ever made. And the coach there was a very good coach, but a tremendous leader. And I remember him saying, "Come here and do what we tell you to do, and put in your work, and I'll get you a job in coaching." And he did, and started that during my college career in the summer, and that summer job turned into a year-round job, and I ended up spending 5 years in Hutchinson, Kansas, and then moved to here to Manhattan 29 years ago, believe it or not, 29 years ago, and I love K-State, and it's been a huge and incredible part of my life and my career, and came here because I wanted an opportunity to coach, and that was it, and I got it, and so the program and I sort of grew up together here, and so here we are in 2013, and I'm starting my 30th year at K-State, and have a great situation here, and couldn't be happier.
Wow, Coach, I didn't realize it had been that long. Now, as you have been there at Kansas State, what makes that school so attractive to athletes?
I lost you, Jason. I don't know if you can hear me, but I lost you.
Okay. Well, let me see if are you there now, Coach?
Yeah, there we go.
Okay. I was asking, in your years of experience there, what makes Kansas State so attractive to athletes?
Well, K-State is it's a prototypical college town, 50,000 people in the community, and there's about 24,000 students here at K-State. And so basically life revolves around the university here. What's kept me here is it was a great place for my family, number one. My kids were born and raised here, and Connie and I have four kids, and three of them have degrees from K-State. And the opportunity to coach obviously was important, but the environment in which to live was one that I felt was good for our family, and it was one that I enjoyed. Being a small Midwestern town, you would expect that it's somewhat isolated out here in the middle of Kansas, but in college tennis and coaching, you travel a lot and you get to see a lot of places, and to this day, I still love coming home. So the fact that the program has made incremental progress over the years and gotten better and better has obviously been has been an important factor for me, but it's just been a wonderful place to live. The people are pretty blue collarish. It's a roll your sleeves up and get something done kind of mentality, which kind of fit with my background and was something that I've always found easy to relate to. So when I think about a place where, if I wanted my kids to go away to college and I went and visited something like this, I would find it very attractive.
Now, what degrees, if you go to K-State, what degrees should you be looking at?
Well, there's over 250, so you got a lot of choices to start with. Of course, K-State was founded as an agricultural school 150 years ago, and So anything to do with agriculture, and because of that, anything to do with science is very good. So we've got a, you know, we don't have a medical school here, but we've got excellent pre-med programs here, and a very high acceptance rate of our pre-med people into med schools. And as I said, anything to do with agriculture is certainly big here. Our engineering school is outstanding. One of my sons got a degree through that program, and had an incredible experience here. We train more teachers than anybody in Kansas, so the education department's good. And then beyond that, I think as you look at state universities across the country, you know, we've got a good business school. We've got, as I said earlier, the sciences are really strong. So there's lots of opportunities academically for students to choose from here.
Coach, you guys play in the Big 12. That's one of the top conferences in the United States of America. I know football is kicking off up there. Are you guys excited at K-State about your football team this year?
Well, we're very excited. We took one on the chin last week, and we opened last Friday night, and it was really a big occasion because of the beginning of this football season. It was big because we're coming off a Big 12 championship in football last year. It was also big because it was the grand opening for a new $75 million renovation of our football stadium, and it's just absolutely a fabulous facility. And I've been in a good number of stadiums around the country and in various conferences, and I'll say this about it, that there are certainly bigger facilities, but I've never seen one nicer than what we have here at K-State. Having said all that, we took a loss on Friday, so this is not a happy week in terms of football in Manhattan. They're anxious to get back on the field and get a win now.
Well, I really think the kind of, and I don't mean it, in the good news here is that you took that loss, the first one, and it, you know, as you travel through that Big 12 schedule, you've got a lot of chances to rise up the rankings and do that. And so I know Coach Snyder will rebound from that and do real well. Now, you guys beat Division I. How many – oh, go ahead.
You mentioned Bill Snyder, and I would be remiss not to say I remember many years ago when Sports Illustrated printed an article, and on the cover it said, "Futility U, the worst college football program in America," and that's been over 20 years ago, and that's right before Bill Snyder was hired, and what he has done here and the way he has performed is I think really second to none in college football.
I agree with that, Coach. Now, how many sports all together there at Kansas State?
Sorry, Jason, I lost you again.
That's all right. I was asking, how many sports total do you have there at Kansas State?
We have 16 sports here, Jason.
Okay. And you don't have a men's tennis program on the campus, correct?
We don't. I came here in August of 1984, and at that time I coached both teams. We had a men's team, and 2 years later, there was a reduction by the NCAA in the minimum number of sports you were required to sponsor. And, you know, quite frankly, K-State just didn't have enough money to really take care of football or basketball, let alone everybody else. And so at that time, they decided to drop two sports, and unfortunately, men's tennis was one of them, and so at that point, I became the coach of one team instead of two, and that was, if my memory serves me correct, 1986.
A lot easier to coach one team than two, I would imagine.
Well, yeah, and it was a question of resources, time, money, opportunities. At that time when I came to K-State, I think we had 3.5 or maybe just under 4 scholarships total, and that was for both programs combined. And I think they moved it to 4 right away, and which meant 2 for the men and 2 for the women. And when they dropped the men's team, they kept the budget the same. So then I had 4 scholarships for women, which, as you know, was half of the 8 that's allowable. So, it was definitely a plus for the women's team at that time.
Yeah. Now, Coach, as you traveled through this, being there in the Big 12, let's talk about your facility just a little bit. How many courts do you have on campus? Are they lit? Do you have an indoor facility?
Well, I'm glad you asked, because your timing's very good, because on Saturday we have a dedication ceremony rather for our brand new outdoor facility, and it's a 6-court facility that is lighted. It's got elevated seating for 400 people behind the courts. It's designed and built as a facility for college tennis. In other words, it's a great place to watch a dual match. People will sit behind the courts. They'll have a good view of all 6 courts at the same time. Be electronic scoreboards, and it's the biggest thing facility wise that's happened to our program in the 30 years that I've been here. We also have an indoor facility that we lease from a club, When our administration changed 5 years ago, one of the first things they did was to negotiate an agreement with the club that gave us priority for scheduling. So we get the times that we need for practice, and although we get a little snow in the winter out here in Kansas, we've got that indoor facility that basically guarantees our players access to courts year round, and if somebody wants to work and improve, then we're gonna put a court there for them to do it on.
Very good, Coach. Now you have 8 full scholarships. Do you carry more players than that, or do you limit it to 8?
No, we don't limit it to 8. In fact, that's something about 5 years ago, I had a conversation with my old coach from Doane College, and he kind of pushed me on this, and at that time we really started to get more aggressive about recruiting walk-ons, and that's something that we've followed up on every year for the past 5 years, and while we've yet to have a player breakthrough and make it into the lineup, we've gotten closer each year, and so that's something that we're gonna continue. I think if we had to limit it, Jason, we'd probably look at 10, but there really isn't a magic number. I only say that because there's only so much opportunity available, in terms of getting in matches, and we try to get as many opportunities in fall tournaments as we can for everybody to get in matches and develop and have a chance to prove themselves. But as you know, once the spring rolls around and we're playing 6 in singles and 6 in doubles, and the name of the game is winning those dual matches. I do think there is a limit, but quite frankly, we have a more difficult time finding players to fill those slots. There have been fewer of them than I would choose or would like to be in those spots.
Coach, you mentioned you've been at school about 2 weeks. As I remember, the NCAA has a few restrictions on you Division I's when you get started at the beginning of the year. When do you start practice as far as having the kids on the court?
Well, as you know, the NCAA rules allow us 8 hours a week creatively referred to as our 8-hour week. And then we switched to what we call the 20-hour week, where we're limited to 20 hours a week of practice, and that's when we really start team practices every day and get on the court a great deal. And for us at K-State, that begins next Monday. So basically, we've got a two and a half week sort of preseason conditioning program, and then we'll start in earnest on the court, as I said, next Monday.
And when's your first tournament, Coach?
The 21st of September, which, if I calculate correctly, is about 3 weeks away. That's not right. We've got 2 full weeks of practice before our first tournament. So I guess actually it's going to be 2 weeks from this Friday.
Now, Coach, do you load up the schedule with heavy hitters as far as teams go that you're going to see in the fall?
Well, this year we have kind of a unique situation. Because of our facility situation, which has not been good for a number of years, it's been a while since we've hosted a fall tournament, and I wanted to get an event on our new facility this fall. So we've scheduled an event with more local teams than we normally do. Of course, one of those teams is Wichita State, who's got an awfully good program, and then a week later we go to Indiana, which is a very strong tournament, and then the week later is the Riviera All-American, and we'll have a player who's most likely going to be in the main draw there, and followed by regionals, and then we finish up our fall with a tournament at Arizona State, and with any luck we'll see if we get someone into the national indoors in Flushing Meadows again.
Coach, your regional, where do you play your regional at?
Our regional is at OU this year, Oklahoma, in Norman, Oklahoma.
Are you part of that Texas region? I mean, the ones where all these, Baylor, UTA&M, is that part of your region too, or are you in a different one?
No, we're in a different one. The southern border of our region, I believe, is the Oklahoma-Texas state line, so... We have all of the Oklahoma schools to the south, and then geographically we go in the north up as far as Minnesota. So University of Minnesota is in our region, northeast to Iowa. So Iowa and Iowa State are here, and we've also got Arkansas in our region. They're one of the top teams every year, because of this part of the country, it's not very densely populated. It's pretty spread out. So geographically, we've got a big region. The quality is pretty good. We've got some nationally competitive schools in there. And I want to say there's about roughly 30 schools in our region.
Now you get finished with your fall, you go away for a Christmas break. Do you bring your kids back early for the spring semester?
Well, I think we get back around approximately the 10th of January, and then our first match in January this year is part of the ITA kickoff weekend, and we open up at the University of Georgia against Arkansas. So we'll as you said, we've got our fall season ends up in early November. We've got really with Thanksgiving break in there, and then finals coming up. We've got a couple of weeks to focus on conditioning and let our players get a little break in terms of time and focus on finishing the semester strong academically, and then like all college coaches. We sort of sit here on pins and needles for the next month and wondering what shape everybody's going to come back in and anticipating the season ahead of us.
Yeah, I'm hoping that those kids hit balls over the summer, I would suppose.
Well, they do, and that's something we certainly encourage it. But with the kind of schedule that they play during the year, we encourage a lot of things during the summer, and certainly playing is one of them. But working on their fitness, and it's a good time to work on, excuse me, on any changes that they need to make in their game, and for a portion of the summer, it's really important that they get a break and that they sort of recharge their batteries and reconnect with family and with friends and get themselves ready for another school year.
Now, Coach, that spring calendar, could you highlight some of the teams you're going to play in the spring?
Well, I mentioned Arkansas already. We've got a relationship we started a couple of years ago with Columbia and Memphis. So we'll be in New York City this year to play. We've got kind of a three-way group. We went to Memphis last year, and this year we're going to play at Columbia. And next year, those two teams will come here to Manhattan. We'll be in California several weeks after that for spring break and play Santa Barbara out there. And that's actually, I believe that's the weekend after we start our Big 12 play. So there's a lot of travel involved. And I mean, my philosophy on scheduling is to have a fairly strong non-conference schedule and to give our players as many opportunities as possible, and you know, our goal is to be in the NCAA tournament, and if you want to do that, you've got to beat a lot of teams in the top 50 in the country, and if you're going to beat them, you got to play a lot of them, and so we see a lot of those schools on our schedule.
Yeah, Coach, and you play a tough conference schedule as well, with UT, A&M, and Baylor mixed in there.
Yeah, our conference is pretty strong. I mean, I at one time I know we had eight teams that were in the top 50 last year, and you know, you've mentioned Texas and Baylor, but I mean, TCU's got a very good team. Texas Tech is a team that sometimes gets overlooked, but they are one of the best teams going, and they have been for a number of years. And I mentioned them for a reason, because I know them so well. We just hired an assistant coach, Liz Ulithorn, who played for Tech the last 4 years, and they've gone from the spot where we are really in the 50s in the rankings, and they've essentially done what it is we want to do and moved into the top 20 in the country and have been a really really prominent program nationally.
Well, I know that I've had several conversations with a lot of coaches here, and the respect that the Big 12 gets is well-deserved. It is a tough conference, particularly on the ladies' side. You know, the men's side, maybe not so much, because they don't have as many teams. I mean, they're still good teams, don't get me wrong. But you guys over there on the women, you've got a strong set of lady teams involved in that hunt for that Big 12 crown.
Well, I certainly agree with that, and in defense of the men's teams, what they may lose in terms of numbers, they make up for in quality. They're awfully, awfully good teams, and on the women's side, which obviously I know a little bit more about, as you said, it's a tough conference. There's very few matches that you can count on winning. Just about everybody in the conference can beat you, and to crack into the top half, you've got to have a pretty good team.
As far as I know, in years ago, I used to joke, and I didn't mean any disrespect, but you had Iowa State. You know, you could go up there. They weren't as talented, weren't as good. You could count on a good conference win. You don't do that anymore in that division.
No, we've learned that lesson the hard way. I can't tell you exactly the year, but we've gone up there and lost before, and with a team that wasn't bad, and They're just no easy matches. That's for sure. And I think of course it's our big rival KU down the road, and we've had pretty good success with them lately. But they just hired Todd Chapman who was the assistant at Texas Tech, so I'm expecting that they're going to be considerably stronger here in the very near future. So every time one of the programs takes a step up, it just strengthens everybody else.
Now, Coach, I'm going to ask here, what role has diversity played in your approach to tennis, and in particular, your approach to the international versus American experience?
Well, that's a big question, Jason, and I guess I might answer it partly with a question back to you, and that would be what exactly diversity means. We do know a lot about international players because we have a lot of them, and there are a lot of sides to that issue. So I guess I'm going to ask you to guide me a little bit more narrowly in what direction you want to go with that.
Absolutely, Coach. You know, in college tennis, and we hear this a lot as coaches, as teachers of the game, that there are just way too many international players in the game. There needs to be more American players given scholarships. And while part of me agrees to that, I think that those people misunderstand what the international brings to a campus or to a college team. And so I'm hoping maybe you can expand on that just a little bit. I know you have some internationals there at Kansas State, and I know you've had some Americans play there at Kansas State. How do they mix, or how do they contribute to your school, to your program, that sort of idea?
Well, I would start by telling a short story. I mentioned earlier on that I played at a junior college in Illinois back in the 70s, and our junior college team was fortunate enough to qualify to go to nationals, and if I remember right, it was in Phoenix at nationals. And when we went down there in the first round, I drew in doubles. We drew a doubles team from, I believe it was Midland Junior College, back from your territory. Does the name Virginia Brown ring a bell?
Oh, yeah, it sure does.
Virginia Brown was the coach, and she had two guys from the Philippines. And, you know, I think it was the first time I'd ever been on an airplane in my life. And so going to Arizona was this kind of big exotic experience for me. And then when I'm down there, I met these two guys from another country. And it was the first time in my life I'd ever done that. At least for during the course of the tournament, we talked, we became friends, and they just beat the pants off of us in tennis, which was fine. It was an experience that I'll never forget. I followed these guys later as I want to say one of them went on to play Davis Cup for the Philippines, and so they were very good players. At the time, I looked at them as interesting people and very, very good tennis players. And I was kind of curious about the accent and the different language and all of that stuff, looked at them for who they were and what they were. So that's kind of guided my philosophy about this. And I've been around tennis for a long time, as you have, and I've seen the different angles to this. I've had, you know, my own children playing junior tennis, what we do here at K-State is we look for the best tennis players we can find, who want to be here at Kansas State, who have good character, who want to be good students, who will represent our university well. And the role that or the importance of where they're from is on the list, but it's not at the top of the list. And so I'd like to believe, although I've never seen this exact scenario come up, I'd like to believe that if a recruiting choice on offering a scholarship came down between two equals, and everything were absolutely equal, and one player were from Kansas and one player were from out of the country, I'd probably give that scholarship to the player from Kansas. I'd like to think I would do that, and I believe I would do that. However, the reality of it is it's an international sport, and it's an open society, and it's the world that we live in, and I understand that some folks probably don't want to hear that or strongly disagree with that, but that's how we look at it here. So if we find somebody who wants to be a good K-Stater and they want to get on the courts here and be part of our program, we're pretty welcoming about that.
Yeah, Coach, I can't disagree with you. The internationals we had brought a lot to the school, and I have a question for you about that. And after the 4 years that your international kids are with you, do you find that a lot of them like to stay in the United States, or do they return home, or what's your feeling about that? How does that go about?
Well, we've seen a lot of different scenarios over the years, and I would say that it's split. We actually, along with our dedication ceremony this weekend, we're having the first tennis reunion we've ever had, and we're going to have some players back here that I coached 20 years ago, and we've got a decent sized group of kids that are flying back from Europe to be here for this reunion. So, and there are women in that group who still live in the States, who were international, who stayed in the States. There were a lot of them who went home. We actually had one player who from the Czech Republic who married an American guy, and he moved with her, and they're now living in Germany. And so we've had a lot of different scenarios. And Jason, probably the biggest thing that I've learned through the recruiting travel and through working with these athletes over the years and getting to know some of their families is that wherever you go, people aren't a whole lot different. They often have different circumstances that surround them and make some different choices maybe because of those circumstances. But when you get down to it, people are people.
Yeah. That's well put, Coach. Now I have to ask, and I know you know you're in the heartland of America there. As you travel around with your college team, as you go recruiting, are you seeing a lot of minorities in tennis? If you look at the women on the pro side here, I mean, just at this U.S. Open, you can tell that minorities are starting to make a push here in tennis. I'm curious about it. At the collegiate level, at your recruiting level, do you see more minorities participating in tennis?
Well, I don't know if I can answer that totally accurately because I think the answer is I think so. But I certainly haven't kept any statistics to say one way or another. And I'm probably like you. I love this time of the year and spend as much time at night as I can glued to the TV watching matches at the Open. And so I probably see the same things that you do and some prominent African Americans and But I honestly don't know. It would seem to me that things are moving in that direction, but I certainly don't have the accurate facts to back up that argument.
Yeah. Coach, in your opinion, and just let me set this up a little bit, you know, you heard me maybe at the beginning there talk about James Blake, the Bryan brothers,
yep.
John Isner. They're great college success stories, but they're on the men's side. Why is it that we don't see more college women having a successful run on the Pro Tour?
Well, I think you mentioned in your comments earlier that about females maturing earlier, and that certainly may have something to do with it. You know, from my experience, when we look at female tennis players, if they're going to be a top 200 player in the world, for example, we tend to believe that we can see that earlier. And you know, I don't know if that's true. I was watching matches over lunch today and heard the commentators saying how we're going to have three women over 30 in the semis this year, so I'm just not sure of the answer to that question.
It's tough, and I asked Coach Kleinicke, Bobby Kleinicke, the same thing, you know, and he mentioned that it probably is due to that maturity factor. I mean, and you look back on some of the great champions that there have been in tennis, and they were out there at 15, 16, 17, so college tennis was so far away from their mind, you know, but I often wonder, I mean, we have late bloomers all the time in all sports. We just have not had a late bloomer successful story at the NCAA level. Now, and I, you know, with the Stanford girls in mind, I mean, Nicole Gibbs is out there right now trying to make it, and she might do it.
Yeah, well, my take on this whole subject, Jason, is maybe a little bit different than many, and probably formed by my experiences, you know, when I recruit in Europe, we find lots of players who you know, the first three letters out of their mouths are WTA, and we're constantly preaching to them, you know, without trying to be insulting in any way, that they're probably not ready, and that what a great avenue college tennis would be for them, and you know, all of the incredible benefits, and that if they do well in college tennis, they will in fact probably be doing more to increase their chances of a possibility to play professional tennis. But you know, I'm not sure that it isn't more of just a gender thing. You know, I think there are more guys who will hang around longer and play than there are women, and maybe the women are just smart enough to get on with their lives sooner. I'm not sure, but those are some of the things that I see.
That's well put, Coach. You know, I am curious about what do you think about the direction of American tennis, and you know. 2 weeks ago, this question, if we didn't have anybody out there that was considered that was going to crack, you know, the top players on the women's side, that changed dramatically. On the men's side, we seem to be aging as far as an American tennis community goes. And Isner's not getting any younger. The Bryan brothers are 35, you know, pretty soon college tennis, the ITA is going to lose some success stories if we don't have somebody else bust through here. So, I mean, you're handling a lot of the top players in the United States being in the Big 12, and as you look at them, are you pleased with the direction of American tennis, or do you think there's something else we could do?
Well, once again, my answer comes from a limited scope. I would say this, Jason, that I've noticed in my 30 some years of coaching is in Division I women's tennis, I don't believe the best teams right now are as good as some of the elite teams 15, 20 years ago. And some of the Stanford teams come to mind, and I've seen more of those teams from a closer perspective in the last 5 years than I did 20 years ago. But just as an avid follower of the sport, it seemed to me as though the elite teams were playing at a little higher level 15 or 20 years ago. On the other side of the coin, however, is now you have teams that are college teams that are 50 to 100 and even lower that are much, much better than anybody at that level 15 or 20 years ago. And so, I guess part of it is how you want to measure success. And if that success means being number one or how many players you have in the top 100 professionally, that may send you in one direction. But I think in terms of the overall depth of the sport, at least on the women's side, for sure, it's much, much stronger than it's been in the past.
So, Coach, are you saying that at the top they're not as good, but they're deep still? I mean, I don't want to take anything away from being good, but that college tennis is getting deeper?
Exactly.
Well, very good. Well, I like to hear that.
That's exactly my point. I think back to we went through a cycle in the late 90s, early 2000s, where we had some of our better teams here, and we were in the 30 to 50 range nationally, and I can remember kind of cruising along there and. You know, if you played somebody below 50, you were going to win if you were at that level. And I've had some teams in the last few years here that I know were as good or better than the teams that I had earlier, and they're out here, fighting for their life against somebody who's 70 in the country. So I'm very, very confident when I say that the depth is better. Maybe there aren't as many great teams, but there's some other coaches who could speak to that. Sheila McInerney or somebody like that who's been doing this for a long time with some of the really top teams. They could comment on that better than I can. But in terms of the 30 to 75 teams, I don't think there's any question it's better now.
Yeah. Coach, just overall, do you see that college experience as a help to American tennis, or is it taking some things away? And I go back to a story that I heard about Coach Gould at Stanford when McEnroe came after doing so well at Wimbledon. Gould took his rackets away and said, "I really don't want to see you for a semester, not anywhere near the tennis courts." And then he came back and played the one semester there, and McEnroe seems to think that was one of the best things that was ever done to him, that he was allowed to be a little bit of a normal person.
Right.
You know, as you go through it with what you do, is that a help for these kids to be a little more normal and win matches?
Well, we're broaching a big subject here, and I think first of all, college tennis is an opportunity, and it's an incredible opportunity for young people. One of the best I can possibly imagine. To compete and learn how to push yourself and be part of a team, and at the same time do those same kind of things academically, all in this incredible environment. So I think it's a college tennis is just a great opportunity, and like any opportunity, it's what you make out of it. And so So a lot of that responsibility has to go to the individual players and their coaches. At the same time, when we talk about trends, is tennis getting better or getting worse? I tend to think about it in terms of developing people. When we've had kids in our program make a big jump in tennis, they don't just make a big jump on the tennis court. Usually it's the case that where they've matured and they've understood, or they've come to understand what it is to have goals, or they've come to understand what it is to work harder, or they've come to understand what it is to push themselves a little bit more. And those are the things that aren't just tennis related. And in fact, maybe they learn it from a professor on campus, or maybe they learn something like that when the coach took their rackets away for a couple months and they became a little bit more of a normal person. I really think there's got to be some balance, and that's a great story you tell about McEnroe, and I think that's what happened is it established a more semblance of balance for him, so anyhow, I could ramble on about this for days, but I think college tennis is a great opportunity. And, whether it's better or worse, I don't know. I'm just very happy to be part of it.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more, Coach. It is a great opportunity, and just all around, coaches, players, administrators, it just provides so much to the character of the school and the program itself. Coach, if somebody's listening to the show today and wants to get in touch with you through an email, can you give that email address out?
Absolutely. It's SBIETAU, my first initial and last name, SBETA, at KState, KSTATE, sports.com. SBETA at KSTATESports.com. I'd love to hear from your listeners.
Well, I appreciate it, Coach. I want to thank you for coming on the air today, and I look forward to keeping up with you.
Enjoyed it. Good luck to you, and thank you, Jason.
Yep. Have a great day.
Bye now.
Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Coach Steve Beata, he's the head women's coach at Kansas State University. They play in the Big 12. It is a very, very tough conference, and Coach Beata has a lot of success there. He does a wonderful job with that program, and as you could tell, they're adding. They've updated facilities there, and they keep bringing in good programs to play, and he brings in good athletes. We're so glad that he came on the air today, and next week we've got, looks like we're trying to get Coach Chris Young in here from Oklahoma State. He should be on the air, and we look forward to talking to him, another Big 12 school, and we'll see what he brings to the table. I want to thank you for listening today, and I want to hope that you'll come back next week. Thanks so much for listening. Bye-bye.